Welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name is Saffron Cordery, and this is the third episode in our Digital Board series. In this episode, we focus on diverse leadership as we hear from Dr. Sherrod Chock, Patricia Miller OBE and Andy Callow as they talk about the challenge the NHS faces in diverse leadership, why it's important for the digital agenda, and how we can support efforts to improve digital inclusion, and we look at what boards and chief executives should be doing now. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag #TheProviderPodcast. Find out more about our National Digital Boards programme by searching NHS Providers Digital Boards, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you. Everyone, and welcome to this Provider Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by three eminent speakers. We've got Dr. Sherrod Chock, who is both co-founder and chair of the Shuri Network, Deputy Chief Medical Officer at NHS Digital, and also National Clinical Advisor on System Transformation at NHS England and NHS Improvement. Try getting that one on a business card. I'm also joined by Patricia Miller OBE, who's Chief Executive at Dorset County Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, is a member of the NHS Providers Board, and she's also Board Director for the NHS Race and Health Observatory. And we're also joined by Andy Callow, Group Chief Digital Information Officer at Kettering General Hospital NHS FT and Northampton General Hospital NHS Trust. You are all very welcome. And today we're going to be looking at the issue of diverse leadership of the digital agenda. And so perhaps, Sherrod, if I could come to you, could you set out the challenge that the NHS faces in terms of diverse leadership of the digital agenda?
Thank you, Saffron, and thanks very much for inviting me to join the podcast today. So I am the chair of the Shuri Network, which is the first network for BME women in the NHS who are involved in digital health and technology. And the challenge was a really personal one, because I was a chief clinical information officer about 4 or 5 years ago in Derbyshire. And I went to a big national conference with about 500 of the most senior digital leaders in the NHS. And I looked around the hall the first morning and I could see 4 or 5 other women from ethnic minority backgrounds. And that to me felt really wrong, because it didn't fit with my perception of the NHS workforce, where 80% are female and about 21% are people from BME backgrounds. So that's why I started the Shuri Network with colleagues. And if you look at the numbers today, if you think about how many women from BME backgrounds are in national digital roles, or working as chief information officers or chief clinical information officers, take a guess, Saffron, how many do you think there are?
That feels like a question I am bound to answer in the wrong way. So I'm going to duck that one.
Okay. The answer is 20. And if you think there are probably maybe 800 to 1,000 CIOs, CCIOs who work in GP federations, in commissioning organizations, in trusts, in arm's length bodies, I mean, that's a really low number. And so that, I think, encapsulates the scale of the challenge we face today.
Thank you. I think that's a really helpful introduction and scene setter to this issue, really. Patricia, if I could come to you, what do you think we need to do and what are you doing to improve this situation?
I think she has made a really good point, because I think diversity needs to be reflected at every level of the NHS. So this is just another avenue where we're not seeing the diversity of leadership or the workforce. And I also think it's important because, you know, we've already got lots of examples where seeing the world through a single lens produces bias in products and services and the way that we work. So if you look at the agenda around artificial intelligence and the conversations that happen internationally at the moment, where a lack of diversity has led to products that have inherent bias within them. So that's a really powerful argument for me as to why diversity matters. I think within organisations, one, it's about culture. It's about developing positive cultures that not just recognise diversity, but seek it because they understand the benefits that it brings. And from that perspective, you know, we can talk about the business argument and the research that McKinsey's have done around how much organisational performance improves once you have a diverse organisation that also behaves in an inclusive way. But there's also a moral argument around if you want individuals to bring their best self to work, then the environment has to be conducive for that to happen. And so I think culture is incredibly important. But what we can do as leaders, other than that, I think there's a lot that we can do around recognising that the future generation comes from standing on our shoulders. And so our work around leadership development, our work around support in mentorship, our work around offering the things that Shera's organisation are offering around shadowing opportunities, and also through that mentoring relationship, creating opportunities and opening doors for people is incredibly important in helping them move forward.
Thank you so much, Patricia. And I think the standing on the shoulders of this generation for the next generation is so important. And it's, I suppose, thinking from my perspective, it's such a generous thing to be doing, but we have to make sure that it's a task that is taken on by everybody and not just very narrowly focused in the way that we have seen. Andy, if I could come to you, how's your organisation seeing this challenge and what's it doing to improve the situation?
So I think firstly, to say that as we've heard, some of the numbers tell us that this is a really critical issue to deal with. So we know, as Shera said, 80% of the workforce in the NHS are women. But I did some research in December time looking at all the CIOs across the NHS and the 226 trusts, and 80% are male. And of those who I could find, only 8 people are from a Black and ethnic minority background. So, you know, they're from the technical space, they're really not representing the population and the of the NHS and of those who are employed. And as we've heard, that actually makes a massive difference to the services we provide, because you come in from a very poor position of understanding. So at Kettering and Northampton, we've done several things. So I really enjoy the reverse mentoring process. Through that process, I've learned a tremendous amount. I've got a brilliant reverse mentor who certainly takes this idea of holding me to account very seriously, which I've really benefited from. And I'm the executive lead for the reach networks at both of our hospitals. And actually, as well as trying to help those groups to sort of make the best they can around what the agendas they want to progress, I've learned a tremendous amount through that, and they've really helped me move on my understanding about race a lot more than 4 years of unconscious bias training in a previous organisation. You know, so it's really made a practical difference. And I'd say that the final bit is around reading. I'll probably mention different books along the way during this conversation. And White Fragility made a massive impact on me earlier on this year, so much so that I bought a big stack and have shared them out with our digital teams across the organisations, just trying to help people feel more able to have uncomfortable conversations about race.
Thank you, Andy. And I really like the idea of us having a reading list from this one. That would be brilliant. Brilliant. We can set people some homework. I want to drill down, because you've all mentioned it in different ways, but I want to drill down into this issue about the links between diverse leadership and better outcomes and improved care quality, because fundamentally, that's what the NHS is here for the patients and public that it serves. And I think that Patricia talked a lot about the moral case, and I think there's some important connections between the moral case in terms of the workforce and the moral case in terms of patients and the public. Patricia, if I could come to you, could you just explain in more detail those connections between diverse leadership and better outcomes?
So for me, I think that the agenda around achieving equality within NHS organisations is intimately connected to reducing health inequalities. If we don't achieve equality within the NHS, where our people understand difference and acknowledge difference and celebrate difference, then we can't expect them to engage with diverse communities in a way that is meaningful. And when we look at the outcomes for minority communities in terms of health outcomes, some of those issues are systemic in that they are about the way that we understand and relate to those communities. You know, when we hear Black women say that they're less likely to receive pain relief because there is a stereotype that they're tougher, harder, that we can withstand more pain than white counterparts, that implies there is a systemic issue. So for me, diversity within organisations, but more than that, really understand equality and also equity, where because we've got to accept that we may need to invest more in some groups in order for them to achieve equality, is absolutely critical to the NHS achieving its ambition of reducing health inequalities. And in the digital space, if your leadership and your digital workforce is diverse, then you're more likely to understand why people face things like digital exclusion, because it's going to be part of your lived experience. So it's the same conversation that we're having across the NHS around diversity on a whole set of fronts.
Thank you, Patricia. I'm going to come to you now, Shera, because I think there's something really interesting about looking at the national perspective on this. And I wonder what connections you're drawing at a national level on this need for diverse leadership and the link between better outcomes and the role that at national level that you can play.
So for me, it's really strongly linked to patient safety. It's far beyond a nice thing to do or a good thing to do. It is absolutely rooted in improving patient safety and patient experience, which is why we all go to work every day. So for example, Professor Laura Sarant, who's one of the Health Education England regional nursing directors, spoke passionately about sepsis and how we recognize sepsis in patients from Afro-Caribbean backgrounds, for example. Now, if that isn't built into medical and clinical training, there is a chance that if you are only seeing it through the lens of, say, Caucasian patients, patients from different ethnic backgrounds could present very differently. Equally, a medical student from King's called Malone Mukwende wrote a book last year about dermatology, skin conditions in Black patients. And that was revolutionary for many academics, for many clinicians. And that was 2020, for goodness sake. So why are we just waking up to the fact that patients from different backgrounds present differently? A melanoma in a Black patient will not look the same as a melanoma or a skin cancer in a white patient or an East Asian patient. So we need to build that diversity in all the way from training, all the way up to the products and services that we offer on a digital level, because the digital products, they are clinical. They are meant to be used by patients, by their families, and by clinicians, and therefore we need to reduce bias in the products that we deliver. And the best way to do that is to ensure that there is diverse representation at all levels.
Thank you very much. And I think the issue of digital inclusion really does merit and deserve our focus, because it's becoming such an important element of what we are seeing in the way that health services are delivered. And I think what I see as a real danger is mainstreaming digital and then making it exclusive in other ways is entirely counterproductive. So Shera, I'm going to come to you again, just because I think that there's something really important about the national level move we've seen to digital. And, you know, we know that, so NHS providers is involved in a whole host of initiatives here, but we also know that digital transformation in the light of COVID-19 has really, really speeded up. But how can the leadership really support digital inclusion on this agenda?
So some advice would be, diversity can't be outsourced. It's not for the HR team to do or the BME network of your trust or your federation to do. Really, if you're a chair or a chief exec or a board member of an organization, you should be leading this. It's your responsibility as a senior NHS leader to really set the standard and the culture and the environment for your organization, because people will be looking to you for leadership, not just in digital, but across all the services that you provide. And if your board does not reflect the wider workforce, if it doesn't reflect the people and the population that you serve, then I think as a senior leader, you should be having those conversations with your staff, with your service users, with their families about, you know, what can be done to increase representation across all the levels of your trust.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Andy now and just ask you, what's your advice to NHS trusts in terms of recruiting more digital teams and digital leaders? And do you have a sense of what good looks like?
So when I look back on my career, there's lots of people who supported me, people who were advocates for me and gave me opportunities to grow and learn. And certainly what has been opened my eyes over the last few years is that experience is not the same for everyone. So I've been keen to do that to others. There's a couple of people who I've been attempting to support and help guide them in their careers. The other aspect around recruitment is I recruited for some roles recently, and the applications that came through, the quality was really variable, and it was pretty frustrating actually. So I blogged about how to do a better application, and in one part of it, I moaned about how some people had left their current salary out. And actually some people challenged me on that in social media and said that actually putting salary as the potential to continue historical biases, for example, where women have been paid lower than this for the same jobs than men. So that actually, I modified the blog as a result of that conversation and sort of opening my eyes around it. So I think hopefully on that, there's a benefit of putting things out on social media and getting a better outcome, but also trying to give some tips for those application processes. The other thing around the recruitment is actually the interview process. And Black colleagues have said they're feeling they need to wear their hair in a particular way, for example, in an interview. And so there's something around helping people to feel comfortable that actually I'm not bothered about what you wear or how you have your hair. I'm interested on how good you are at being your job and being an excellent member of our teams. And also being aware of cultural context in interviews that can be interpreted as lack of confidence. When it's nothing of the sort, actually, and I think we need to get better at that. And certainly having colleagues from the REACH network on our panels has sort of helped make sure that that's not creeping into some of the interpretation. And then I guess finally, I say about the recruitment jobs, and this goes beyond diversity and inclusion. Some of the digital jobs I've seen advertised recently are pretty uninspiring. But I think there's a really missed opportunity to create a vision of what the future looks like and what the job is there. And an indication that actually what you're doing here is using digital to build a better NHS, and there's a missed chance there.
Thanks, Andy. And I just wonder if, Patricia, if I could just ask you, as you talked, you raised the issue of equity, not just fairness, but equity. And I think that for me, this is a really, really important context. So when we're thinking about equity in terms of recruitment, what do you think the key things are that we need to remember?
Just in terms of recruitment?
Yeah, I just think it's a really important element of thinking around recruitment. I mean, we can go wider than that, but I think there's something about how we focus on equity in that particular context.
I think some of Andy's points are really important. The whole process that we go through to recruit new staff needs to be fairer. And, you know, I hear all the time NHS organisations say to me, well, we didn't get any diverse candidates. And I say, but how hard did you try? There's something about, one, the language of adverts that we put out, lots of evidence that shows just on the gender split that the language you use in an advert is really important as to whether it encourages men or women to apply. And the same applies in terms of cultural difference. So what sort of language do we use? Where do we advertise? Do we really advertise in communications that ethnic minority communities are likely to read, so that they know that that's an organisation that is really interested in recruiting diverse people? I think having a board that is diverse really helps. It tells candidates that the board is committed to a diverse workforce if they look at the board and they see people that look like them. And also that gives them the aspiration that those very senior roles at some point in their career are available to them. So those are the things I think that are really important. Also the makeup of panels, another point that Andy made. Panels need to be diverse because if they're not, again, we see candidates through a single lens and we're likely to make judgments about them that are not accurate. Things like I hear all the time, candidates that come from the Caribbean or Africa, well, they weren't motivated for the job. Well, probably because part of their cultural demeanour is that they're quite laid back and that's interpreted as them not really wanting the job. So having panels that are culturally competent and diverse is important.
Thank you so much. I think that's really helpful insights that really build on that issue. So the Digital Boards programme that NHS Providers is running, as the name suggests, is really focusing on boards and their leadership and thinking about digital inclusion and diversity. I'm going to ask each of you now, what's the one thing that boards and specifically NHS Chief Execs should be doing now from each of your different perspectives? So Shera, if I could come to you as chair of the Shuri Network and also from your national roles, what's your one word of advice or what would you exhort boards and chief executives to do right now to improve digital diversity?
So I think we need to look for the best talent and we need to look for them in places that we haven't traditionally looked for them. So start being much more proactive about how you're developing your talent pipeline within your trust and also reaching out to organisations before you start recruiting to digital posts so that you have those relationships with communities and groups that you don't normally recruit from. So, you know, our shadowing programme, great chance for organisations to showcase what they do, what it's like working for you by giving someone a window into your world. So join our shadowing programme would be my one piece of advice.
And just thinking about your role within, you know, the national organisation, so in NHS Digital and also in NHS England and Improvement, what does diversity look like there at the moment?
Well, I think the whole of the health tech industry is not terribly diverse. I think we all know that. And that applies to arm's length bodies as well, like NHS Digital, NHSX. But our Chief Exec, Sarah Wilkinson, made a really good suggestion. She suggested that we collaborate with NHSX to improve diversity and inclusion. And that's such a really practical step because together we are the biggest employers of digital workforce in the country. Thousands of people work for both X and D. So why shouldn't we collaborate? Why shouldn't we share best practice? We could learn so much from each other. So we're taking that forward at the moment.
Thank you. Thank you. Andy, given your role on board as the Group Chief Digital Information Officer, what would you want your other execs or your Chief Exec and Chair to really take on board?
So I think it's around people who are in leadership positions, you know, that they shouldn't be able to get to the top without competency in diversity and inclusion. So, you know, in the same way we look around the table and value people for their technical competence, I think this is a equally valid competence that we need to make sure we've got. And as you said, it's around the impact that has on the quality of decision making means it should be just as vital as, you know, whether I'm a great digital leader or otherwise.
Thank you. And Patricia, slightly different question for you because you are a board chief executive. So I want to know what your hope for the future is. This is your opportunity, the last word in this podcast. So what's your hope for the future?
My utopia.
Yes, your utopia.
My hope for the future is that the NHS really does grasp this nettle and become an inclusive organisation, that it is able to act as its own critical friend and acknowledge the things it does well, but also acknowledge the things that it doesn't do well, and this is one of them, and really grapple with it and turn the NHS into what Prehn's ambition is, which is the absolute best place to work for everyone, not just some people.
Well, Patricia Miller, Andy Callow and Shira Chok, thank you very much indeed for joining us.